Former Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan is on a tear, or maybe he's just promoting his new book. Either way, he spent the last couple of days dishing on his nearly 20 years as head of the Fed and offering some harsh words for the current administration's policies. The self-described libertarian Republican presided over the longest economic boom in U.S. history. Now he's turning heads with his unusually blunt criticism, especially since some analysts blame his policies for our current economic slowdown. For this and more, we've got Bill Spriggs, professor and chair of economics at Howard University. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
So Greenspan used to hold his cards close to the vest, but he came out guns blazing yesterday and today. Does what he said surprise you?
Well, in a way, because he has now said that people didn't understand what he was saying when he testified before Congress. And most of the time, most of us believed he was trying to make sure Congress couldn't understand what he was saying. So it is an interesting take on his life now.
What specifically does he challenge about how people have looked at his record?
Well, for one thing, his criticism of the Bush administration, the current Bush administration, has been based on his initial support of the Bush tax cuts, and people are pointing out that it's hypocritical for him to now attack the Bush fiscal policies. But he claims that when he testified before Congress, that what he was really saying was, well, the tax cuts are okay, but only if you cover them with cuts in federal spending. And you have to dig very deep in the testimony to understand that's what he was saying. His support of those tax cuts, he was fully aware, though, would lead to a government which would be unbelievably small, much smaller than we've had in the last 50 years. And in the face of a war that the president was trying to administer, it seems disingenuous to claim that the president didn't explain that this was going to create deficits. And so supporting the tax cuts was to support deficits.
So some folks have said that Greenspan's consistent slashing of interest rates has contributed to the current housing crisis. Explain why, and do you think there's any truth to that allegation?
Well, people blame his easy money policies in the face of the dot-com bust as creating enough money flowing around that a lot of people started to buy homes, bidding up the price of housing. That may be partially true, but the current problem we're having in the housing bust has far more to do with Greenspan being a libertarian, his belief that the government ought not regulate. And one of the roles of the Federal Reserve is, in fact, to regulate, and in specific, to regulate banking. So it has a set of tools, not just monetary policy, but the ability to regulate both the stock market and the housing market. They chose not to go after lenders who clearly were discriminating and profiting from subprime loans, and they could have forced them to behave much better and have interest rates which would have been lower for clients who, in fact, deserve to have lower interest rates. And we wouldn't have had this sudden bust brought on by the subprime loan crisis had the Federal Reserve been far more serious about its regulatory authority under issues dealing with fair credit.
Let's take another look at the big picture, but from a different angle. Recession. Americans are filing for unemployment at the highest rate in 4 years. Do we know what sectors of the economy that these folks who are losing jobs are coming from?
Well, because the housing market has reached a bust point, local tax bases have been greatly affected. So the private sector actually still added a few thousand jobs, a measly 24,000 jobs last month. It was the public sector where we saw the biggest cutbacks because local governments tend to operate on a July 1st fiscal year, and so now they've started cutting back, either not filling vacancies or outright laying off workers. So it was local government and state governments that led the way in terms of the drop in employment. And, of course, manufacturing continues to lose jobs, and construction has been hurt by this housing bust. And so we continue to lose jobs in construction. The finance industry is starting to lay off workers as well. In the last month, all of the numbers that we've been hearing about haven't started to show up. But we will see the finance sector show some weakness as well.
Countrywide, the biggest mortgage lender laid off 10,000 people. I mean, that's an astronomical number. Most businesses, individual businesses, aren't going to have those kind of numbers. But what does all this really mean for the future of the American economy?
We're in a very shaky position because the recovery was boosted by people being able to refinance their homes, refinance their debt, restructure their debt. And people aren't able to do that anymore. Their home equity is not escalated at the rate they anticipated. Incomes did not do very well during this recovery. And this last year, we finally saw median household incomes inch up a little bit. So the problem we're facing going forward is the amount of debt that Americans have taken on the personal level and the extreme optimism they showed in the equities that were backing that debt. We're in a very dangerous position because the only way to get out of debt is you either stop spending or you make a lot more money. And since people have been making a lot more money, sooner rather than later, it means that they're going to have to stop spending.
And stopping spending would be catastrophic. I mean, this is in some ways a consumer-driven economy. So we're not officially in a recession. We're in a slowdown. What would make the difference? Does consumer spending have part of a role in making the difference between a recession and a slowdown?
Well, it does because we demand labor because people demand products. So auto workers lose jobs if people don't demand automobiles. And that's what we're about to risk is that when next year comes and a number of these mortgages adjust upwards again and people have to figure out how are they going to pay higher mortgage notes, and we're still seeing the price of oil go up, if they have to pay higher prices for fuel and for housing, we could very well see people stop spending.
Now, just define a recession for me. What are we really talking about? Is there some flat rate of numbers? Does it, you know, relate to a specific decline in specific indicators?
Typically, it's dominated by two quarters where the GDP, the measure of the nation's output, declines. There are some other factors that economists look at, but that's sort of the dominant definition of a recession. If we have two consecutive negative growths for the output of the economy.
Now, we've been talking about the U.S., but what role do foreign economies play in all this? And are people really buying what the U.S. is selling?
Well, we probably play the bigger role going the other way. If Americans stop buying, given what we import, it means that other economies are in deep trouble because we tend to slow down our demand for those foreign goods. And so other countries are looking at this very cautiously. That's why you saw Saudi Arabia step in and try and increase oil production because they were afraid that if higher oil prices slowed the American economy, everybody would suffer.
Well, let's turn to oil. There has usually been a spike in gas prices during the summer, but Labor Day has come and gone. The price of oil is around $80 a barrel. It was $69 a barrel a month ago. So what happened?
Well, the most recent spike, people think, was related to speculation around the effect of storms in the Gulf Coast, and that's where we do most of our refinery, and fears that we would have interruptions in our refinery capacity. The rest of the world has been moderating some of its demands for oil. So we had fairly modest prices up until this sort of scare from the storms. So we'll have to wait and see. And as I said, other countries are afraid of the U.S. going into recession. So countries like Saudi Arabia are pushing OPEC to be sensitive to that.
Now, what does it mean to a consumer when it goes from $69 to $80 a barrel? We don't buy barrels. We buy gallons. What kind of a difference is there on the consumer side?
Well, these end up being pennies on the gallon for the refined product of gasoline. And they don't directly correlate all the time because major refineries purchase their oil not on the spot market, but have long-term contracts. So these things trickle their way to the gas pump. And so we'll just have to see how rapidly the gasoline prices will be making adjustments. And we're nearing the time when the refiners will switch over more heavily to fuel oil for heating purposes. And that's where a lot of people may see it first, is how much it's going to cost to heat their homes.
There has been a lot of controversy over the Venezuelan president Hugo Chavez giving reduced oil, heating oil, to some regions of American society. Do you anticipate that perhaps the rise in heating oil will once again affect how the U.S. interacts with that country and other countries around simply staying warm in the winter, which not everyone has the opportunity to do?
Well, yeah, I mean, what Chavez has hit on is an embarrassment in the U.S. There's a constant fight in Congress to maintain a federal program designed to help low-income families and elderly households heat their homes, and it's an ugly political fight every year over this type of funding. And I think Chavez just gets a big joke out of needling us over not taking care of our own.
What are solutions to that, you think?
Well, I mean, we just have to have a Congress that is much more sensitive to the needs of the American people, and this really ought not be a continued battle over helping low-income families and the elderly heat their homes. It does say something about our values as a country, whether we truly honor each other and consider this to be a country where we should have shared prosperity.
Bill, thanks so much.
Well, thank you for having me.
Bill Spriggs is a professor and chair of economics at Howard University.